Thanks. I appreciate Dave's talk. I could have used that graph showing the canopy with the roots extending out. And what I want to do is take us down to an area that's quite a bit drier. We're looking at about 150 millimeters a year of precip with shrubs that are quite a bit smaller. So we're not looking at PJ. We're looking at creosote bush that maybe has a height of a meter with a canopy diameter of maybe a meter and a half. And to really look at how the near surface water content both under the canopy and between canopies are changing essentially on an hour-by-hour basis. And so Dave's graph showing scale and both temporal and spatial scale would be quite relevant here too. And so really our motivation here for doing this research was to essentially help the ecological community on a research site that they have been working on really since, I want to say, the turn of the century, which was just probably 7-8 years ago, for looking at both carbon and nitrogen fluxes in desert environments that are undergoing different types of treatments being surface disturbance, nitrogen inputs, and water inputs. And so we know, for example, that you know, just being in soil hydrology, that a lot of the processes are dominated by soil water content in the upper 5 to 10 centimeters, everything from regional climate in terms of evaporation, the partitioning of both mass into evaporation and transpiration, latent heat flux versus sensible heat flux. A lot of these things are very strongly coupled. And as well, the motivation for this project was really looking at biological processes and microbial respiration and how the near surface water content might be influencing that and sort of vice versa. And this is an example here of a creosote bush, which is Laria tridentata, and there's Ambrosia dumosa over here, and the spacing between that is maybe a couple of meters. And so there is a lateral root structure with these types of shrubs. They have a vertical tap root and laterals that move out radially away from the stem, and the roots move into the inner space, which is essentially devoid of vegetation but is mostly populated with different types of biological crusts, being lichens and cyanobacteria. And these crusts are known to be nitrogen fixers, and our goal really was to try to understand the extent to which water content might be influencing those rates. We focused on measurements using dual probe heat pulse sensors from 0 to 5 centimeter depth for about 27 months with probes that were placed underneath canopies and in the inner space. And so we collected data basically from 48 probes every 4 hours for about 27 months. So we collected about 350,000 measurements or so. And I wanted just to sort of show a graph that that my colleague Lynn Fenstermaker will be presenting in a couple of minutes in one of the other rooms here. I urge you to stay here, of course. And this shows essentially carbon respiration as a function of water content that was done inside of a small flux chamber, where we were measuring the water content with the dual probe heat pulse sensors, and we were measuring carbon flux simultaneously. And it shows a pretty linear relationship down to water content of about 8%, at which point the respiration drops off pretty quickly. And we just show a regression line that's significant to 0.001. If we look at photosynthetic activity, we can see this is a paper from Rostov and others in 2005, and so this graph really shows essentially a Gaussian distribution of crust response in micromole per carbon per meter square per second at water contents of about 10%, a volumetric water content maybe 10%. You can see there's an increase. It starts off near zero. The water content increases, the crusts begin to photosynthesize, it maxes out at a particular level, and then the water content goes down. As water content goes up, the photosynthetic rate decreases because there's less oxygen available for photosynthesis. And then we can essentially translate this into carbon gain directly from the biological crusts, assuming that we can basically measure this. And so our goal really was to look at the spatial temporal variability of water content in near surface environments from 0 to 5 centimeters or so. And I have some hypotheses listed here, and I'll describe what I mean by these treatments. But that is that water content between microsites, and a microsite is underneath a canopy, sort of within the drip line of a Larry, although it is an open canopy, versus the inner space, that they're going to vary differently. And there's going to be statistically and fundamentally different environments between these sites, that depth the water content dynamics between 0 and 5 centimeters is going to be statistically different. That water content persistence is going to be location dependent. In other words, if there's areas that have higher water content, that pattern is going to persist for a longer period of time in these microclimates, microenvironments, and that the water content patterns will depend on physical treatments of site disturbance. In other words, if the soil is disturbed and we disturb the crust, does it affect the water entry into the soil and the water loss through evaporation? And so this is just a kind of schematics. This is Nevada right here. This is the Mojave Global Change Facility, which is an area of about 400 by 400 meters. And within here, there are 96 subplots that vary according to site disturbance, water addition, and nitrogen addition. And we're installing, there are 16 probes here that are seen by little bitty squares that are probably hard to note. But the white squares are interspace locations. The yellow squares are under canopy on the north side and south side of the shrubs. And we're using these to see whether or not the solar radiation, which differs based on a location relative to the shrub, whether that alters the water dynamics. And we're doing this in three separate plots, an irrigated and disturbed plot, an irrigated and an undisturbed plot, and then a control plot, which is down here on the bottom right. And this is just a picture of the probe that was made by East 30 Sensors. And I just kind of described, we installed these in early March. And we have 48 probes total, and I kind of describe how each one of the plots are set up. And there's 8 under canopy and 8 interspace plots, and we're trying to vary these things according to sort of microsite. And we more or less finished collecting data in 2008 during the summertime. The analysis to analyze the thermal probes, we used basically a method that's been around for a while that we're solving the heat flow equation and trying to match the thermal response curve that's measured by the probe versus the solving the heat flow equation. And in this particular case, we're altering the water content and the effective probe spacing and optimizing on those two variables primarily to match the thermal response curve of an 80-second period of time after an 8-second pulse width of heating. And as I mentioned before, we have an enormous data set with multiple different types of, quote, treatments, and treatments being where we're placing the probe relative to one another. And so we're using non-metric multidimensional scaling, which is a statistical, multivariate statistical technique that's used commonly in the biological community to see if we can sort of piece out these different factors that may be influencing the water content. And we have 5 separate treatments, a microsite type, which is either an under canopy and an interspace. We have the shrub location, whether we're on the north side of the shrub or the south side. We have the depth, which is either at 0 centimeters, right at ground surface, or at 5 centimeters. We have disturbed versus undisturbed, and we have water being either ambient, just precip, or ambient plus irrigation. So these are the kind of treatments that we're sort of looking at with both respect to, you know, human treatments of the soil versus the placement of the probe itself. And then afterwards, I'll describe some data. We're looking at the mean relative difference technique from Vachaud back in the mid-80s that measures the persistence in these water content patterns and how we can somehow make assumptions about how long the water will be above a particular threshold water content where we are getting crust photosynthesis over time. And just by way of results, we have a lot of these probes here. I'm just going to show some representative data that the challenge has been to just figure out how to analyze a very large data set, which itself can be a curse. And so this is basically an under canopy site. So this is below a shrub, and this is an interspace site. So it's out with completely in between the shrubs. And there's a couple things to note here. That first of all, you can see that the histograms themselves differ quite a bit. So the under canopy shrub has a smaller number of occurrences at low water contents, and it's essentially still skewed right, but there's quite a lot of occurrences of water content. This graph goes out to about 30%. And so there's a fair amount of occurrences of water content, which is well above that point where we can get photosynthesis. If we look at the interspace, we have an awful lot of occurrences of water content that's below 10%, where we would get very little respiration and photosynthesis, and a few number of occurrences that are above this kind of threshold. So we have, just by looking at this graph, we see a very different pattern in the persistence of the water underneath the canopy versus the interspace. if we go ahead and look at this is the same interspace graph I showed before, but this is at 0 centimeters, and this is a probe that's adjacent to it at 5 centimeters. And you can see, first of all, that at 5 centimeters, we have a bimodal water content distribution, which is essentially primarily very dry during the summer, and then during the winter and during these summer monsoon storms, which are fairly infrequent, we see the water content lingering at depth for a longer time than we would over in the undercanopy. And the reason why this becomes important is that Laria tridentata has lateral root systems with the roots more or less at about 10 centimeter depth. So the fact that we're getting surface evaporation that we can see here, and we're getting water content more or less available for the shrubs, this is something that's providing a kind of a coping strategy for the shrubs during summer precip events. And so we're able to sort of detect this based on installing these probes at depth. And we have a total of 6 probes that are at 5 centimeter depth, and we see this bimodal pattern in 5 out of 6 probes. So it's fairly well replicated. So this graph is the kind of result that you get with non-metric multidimensional scaling, or NMS. And the idea here is that these points, which each represent a different treatment, and a treatment, again, is its location or the depth or the relative position adjacent to a shrub, that basically as the analysis goes through, and it's an optimization analysis, which is similar to principal component analysis, that the greater the spread of the data across this two-axis graph basically indicates that there are differences in the values themselves. And these lines here with the crosses are essentially the different treatments that we were looking at. And here are the vector lengths, with depth being the longest length, and then shrub location, microsite, site disturbance, and water source. And so the way to look at this graph would be down here to the bottom left, and this bottom left quadrant would be depth. And so the water, so that there's a significant gradient in the treatment effect from 0 centimeters over here from the top right to 5 centimeters down here in the bottom left. If we wanted to look at the impact of the shrubs on this type of a pattern, then all the vectors that are moving toward the shrub toward the top right of the graph is basically an indication of the effect of the shrubs themselves. And here's the shrub location. In other words, are we underneath a shrub or are we not? And here, and then the microsite actually is shrub, no shrub, and the shrub location is on the north side or the south side. So in both of these vectors are toward this kind of region of the graph which has the implications of shrubs, and toward the bottom right here is where the site disturbance comes into play. Now, we're doing this for what I'm calling a cool wet period, so I'm looking at this for a 1-week period. There's about 42 measurements that are represented in this graph, and I've done this for different time periods and different lengths of time, and the patterns themselves are more or less, in terms of the relative position of these vectors, are identical for every one of these different periods, whether it's warm, whether it's cold, whether it's wet, whether it's dry. And so it shows a very much of a persistent pattern based on the influence of these different treatments on the water contents. If we wanted to look at mean relative difference, which has been around for quite a while, there's a lot of work that's been done on this, especially with really large scale. The Oklahoma MesoNet has done this. A lot of the SGP97 types of experiments, where they're looking at regional water content and how regional water content might influence climate and things like that. This is a technique that just looks at persistence. And so these numbers down here are just the identification number of the probe itself, but I'll sort of tie that in a little bit. And this is a dry day, so this is in the middle of the summer in the Mojave Desert. It's very dry. There's a mean temperature of the soil is about 65 degrees C, and what you see is fairly stable, very low error bars in here. The day after it rains, or the day of rain, we see about a 7-time increase in the standard deviation. So the water contents themselves are changing quite a bit. And if we take this kind of an idea, where by the way, the relative position here, so down around 0 and 1, is biased dry soil, and over on the right side of the graph is biased wet. And right at this 0 mark essentially is an indication of no bias. So it's essentially a mean behavior. And so this graph shows what the position of the probes would be relative to one another in water content for 7 days. It's essentially on day two, on August 1st, where we got that precipitation event. It turned out to be about 6 millimeters. So it's a fairly small event. For us, it's important. I try to just represent this by looking at colored cells here. So this cell is this sort of brown cell represents an interspace soil at zero centimeters. So it's right at ground surface. The yellow cell represents an interspace location that's at 5 centimeters, and then the purple and the blue are under canopy locations. And what it shows on day one is that, as expected, the interspace soil is going to be very dry. The 5 centimeter depth soil is essentially showing mean behavior across all of the across the entire plot, and then the under canopy probes are showing the wettest soil, and it's something that would be expected based on shading of the canopy. The day of the precip event, we get a complete reversal so that the deeper soil is now wettest, so we've had percolation down to 5 centimeters. There's not a whole lot of influence underneath the canopy, mainly because of canopy interception with this relatively small event. There's probably some hydrophobicity that prevents the water from getting through the duff layer. It's a relatively thin duff layer. And then over time, we come back after about 3 or 4 days where we're more or less back to the original pattern. And we've seen this for multiple different events, something that we can essentially replicate at different sites. So just really quickly, I'm just sort of repeating the hypotheses from early on, and that is that the soil water content differs based on microsite, and both the NMS and the histogram show really clear differences in the near surface dynamics, both on temporal dynamics as well as spatial dynamics, and it's very strongly related to depth and location. The persistence of the water content is dependent, so the mean relative difference analysis shows about a 3 to 5 day period where we're getting a lot of changes in the relative water contents, and the water content patterns, the NMS results really show no difference at all between plot treatments. So whether the soil's been disturbed or not, at the very near surface showed no influence at all, and neither did the water addition based on irrigation. And so the take-home message is really that the biotic influences at this particular scale and at this relatively short time frame is dominating the water, the differences in these water content differences. And I just want to acknowledge the sponsors and patient family members. Thank you. Right. Well, that's a good. I tried that, and the challenge is that the mean relative difference is rescaled between 0 and 1, and so trying to look at the mean divided by the variance divided by the mean or the CV would have been, it came up with numbers that didn't make a whole lot of sense, and so showing the raw standard deviation was actually more illustrative of the variability within the probe than the CV, but. It's something I need to look at more, and I think if we can scale somehow back you know, the equations out a little bit and really look at differences in the mean differences and without making them relative, and then dividing by the standard deviation, we can come up with a kind of a neat way of looking at that. Okay, thanks.
Our next speaker is Ty Oshner from Oklahoma State University.